Hello and welcome to Awards Daily TV's Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your regular host, Clarence Moy, and this is another entry in our ongoing series of Emmy Contender podcasts. And today I have with me Mr. Joey Moser, who has interviewed Maren Hinkle of Amazon Prime's The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. So Joey, how was interviewing Maren Hinkle?
It was great. I like that you introduced me as Mr. Joey Moser. It's, I guess you can obviously tell I'm wearing a top hat. she was delightful. She and I talked about, I was very interested in, you know, Rose Weissman's emotional journey, because the Amy Sherman Palladino really allows her to have some really nice emotional moments. The season sort of kicks off with her character has run off to Paris because she's mad at her husband, and Rachel Brosnahan and Tony Shalhoub, her daughter and her husband, have to like go retrieve her. So we start at the top of the interview. I asked her if Rose ever expected them to, you know, both of them to show up across the world to come pick her up. And we sort of talked about her emotional place where she is and why she probably did that. And then we sort of went, as the season goes on, we talked a little bit about, you know, her, you know, time in the Catskills, because that's a really big part of season two. But she is a delightful, delightful person. I absolutely adored chatting with her. She was a total delight.
Awesome. So this would be her first Emmy nomination for the series, correct? She was not nominated last year.
She was not. I think, unfortunately, Alex Borstein won last season, very deservedly so. I'm hoping that maybe, from what I hear, there's a lot of love in the industry for that show. So I'm kind of hoping that she gets in there too. So she would be a very worthy contender alongside Alex Borstein.
Absolutely. And I think we both have been sort of pegging her to be in heavy contention because of her expanded character arc and that trip to Paris, which I think allows her to, as you've mentioned, deepen the character quite a bit.
Yeah. And she also briefly mentions about how her and Tony really get to sort of change their energy is different as a couple in a different city. And they're both of their characters, like, emotional trajectory is completely different because they are in this different place. So she talks about that too. And we sort of get to talk about, so, you know, some little stuff, like she talks about her relationship with Rachel, and, you know, she admires her so much, and she talks about how she's always nervous to, you know, do that really quick rat-a-tat-tat dialogue. So that was actually very surprising to hear.
Excellent. So we invite our listeners, of course, to sit back and listen to Mr. Joey Moser, ADTV's very own Mr. Joey Moser, as he interviews Marvelous Mrs. Maisel's Maren Hinkle. And of course, be sure to subscribe to the Water Cooler Podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, so you can listen to even more interviews with Emmy contending stars.
Hi, Maren.
Hi, Joey. How you doing? Happy Friday to you.
Yeah, thank you. You too.
Thank you.
I have to say that I adore the show and I adore you, so thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's, you know, it's one of the shows in my life that I will never get sick of talking about.
Yeah.
I think that everybody has their own kind of, which happens in a lot of shows, but this, in case in point, like, there's, like, old people that love it, but then there's young kids who love it, and then there's, you know, you don't think that the men would like it, but then all of a sudden you're realizing that men like it as much as women, and so it's kind of been surprising that way.
Yeah.
I'm glad you like it. I'm
So just to jump in, when Midge and Abe show up in Paris, did Rose ever expect them to both show up to come retrieve her, do you think?
You know, I think secretly she hoped so. Mm-hmm. I think that she's, although she doesn't play it this way in the scene, it wasn't written this way, mm-hmm. Nor do we get to see that. We sort of see her covered, but I think she's kind of astonished that it took them this long to come.
Yeah.
I think as time had gone on, the weeks had gone on, there was a little bit of her, like, the anger just got larger and larger and larger, so that by the time we actually see her take them in that restaurant, uh-huh. The reason why she ignores them and is so utterly kind of disconnected and much more involved in her dog, uh-huh. is because she's written them off, supposedly, on the kind of facade.
Yeah. Like, thank God, like, you guys finally came to get me.
Exactly, like, yeah. How long, counted the days. Although, you know, I will say this, I think that there's this part of her, and I suppose this happens with a lot of people in the world that sort of do something for effect, mm-hmm. and when the effect doesn't ensue mm-hmm. The way that they had thought would be unfolding, the need for kind of an independent streak mm-hmm. follows. And so in this case, I think she has a bit of a, you know, codependent relationship with her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as time is going on, we're seeing, obviously, what it means for Rose to sort of rediscover a connection to self that isn't so connected to everyone else.
Yeah.
Much more about her own dreams.
Mm-hmm. I sort of love in that scene with you and Abe when you show him the apartment. And I actually just rewatched it today, and I sort of actually, to a certain degree, thought it was kind of, like, cruel the way how excited he was. And I feel like he probably knew where this was going, and you have that great line, here in Paris, I'm shatterproof, and you are alone in the shot, and then at one point you turn around and you're looking out the window, I think. Do you think that Rose even knows the last time she ever felt that way?
So funny, all of the people that have asked me about Paris have always asked about that line, a mm-hmm. different line, which is the one where Mitch says, I've missed you, Mama, and then Rose says,
I missed me too, yeah.
But no one's asked about the shatterproof line.
Really?
And I love that line mm-hmm. here in France, I'm shatterproof. I think it's possible that at the time that she met Abe,
mm-hmm.
she felt that kind of confidence in herself, but what we kind of planned as we were thinking about it a little bit, and I talked to Amy and Dan, is I think her greatest sense of independence actually hit prior to meeting Abe,
uh-huh.
and then she sort of gave over to what the mores of the time were in terms mm-hmm. of getting married. So, in answer to your question, I wonder if that feeling was actually hit her when she was studying in Paris last.
Yeah.
So sort of like this rediscovered and reconnection to that exact feeling happening at that in that exact city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I think, by the way, happens beautifully in life so often, is that the dictates of a environment offer mm-hmm. us this emotional response that we can't quite necessarily even find anywhere else except for the very environment where we originally had felt something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which is why, by the way, we revisit, you know, places of our past.
Yeah.
To kind of reconnect to something that we already heard.
Yeah, try to, like, really recapture that feeling. Yeah, I totally understand that. Even, like, your energy in that is completely different when you're there, especially in those really great sort of vignettes that you have with Abe, where you guys are, like, gallivanting around the city. How would you say your chemistry with even Tony changed while you were playing those scenes?
Thanks for that question. I think, you know, what was really incredibly generous of Amazon and Amy and Dan and et cetera was that they let us have about a week or so before I think we started shooting to be in Paris.
Oh, wow.
And Tony and I started having some dance classes because, you know, there's that lovely scene along the Seine, which, by the way, in the end is only like 1 second
of
the time, but we, of course, rehearsed for like days and weeks, and not really weeks, but days, with this beautiful French, you know, set of dancers, and we got to watch them, and there was something about, you know, and this is why when people go on location, I bet sometimes it deepens the work for actors, but mm-hmm. so often I haven't been empowered enough to be able to do that, or I haven't just had those opportunities.
Yeah.
But I think that Tony and I kind of traveling through that city together and being, you know, brought to various parts of the city. You know, we had friends and relatives visiting, but we definitely experienced as friends and actors something that kind of brought us together that then in the shared union of what our roles were going to be together, I think it kind of endowed them with a new flavor, as you put it.
Yeah.
But I will say this, one of the things I love is Donna Zakowska, who does our incredible costume, had this sort of amazing vision that Rose's, and Amy came up with this too, she said, I want Rose to be able to throw her legs up over the chair. And by the way, we shot this in that first scene,
uh-huh.
and she wanted me to be able to, like, throw my legs up and have me, like, drag on the cigarette. And I don't think we kept that shot because mm-hmm. it was almost too much, but she wanted my clothes to have this freedom that we haven't had Rose be able to have physically. And so when we were sort of like running through the city, and it was very cold when we were shooting, but there was a kind of skip, like a little bit of a, like a, you know, joy in my gait that I don't think necessarily Rose has been able to have. Like, it's almost like she's been corseted tighter in the New York life than we got to see. Like, she pulled off her corset and let her bra a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? And that sort of burned the bra kind of moment, but instead of burning it, she just loosened it.
Yeah.
But I do kind of think that that it allowed for the physicality of Rose to be very different in that city.
Oh, yeah. Like, I could even... I'm sort of always really fascinated with actors' physicality, just how they, like, live inside their bodies. And I feel like you can really tell the change in those scenes. You're a lot, like, looser, and there's sort of a happiness with the way that you move your body almost. In a way.
Thank you. Nobody, you're so, wow, I feel like, were you a dancer or are
you? I studied theater in college.
You know. Well, nobody's asked anything like this before. And I'm going to say another thing that was interesting about that was Donna is, I said earlier, such a genius, and she's really in control of, you know, all the vision of all the looks and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a moment where they were choosing what, coat I would wear in that scene that you just referred to before, where I showed the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And originally they had me in a much bigger, bulkier coat.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, I kind of feel like her expressions with her body need a kind of looseness that needs to have a definition that I kind of almost want the audience to be able to, not that we're going to see her naked or even anything close to that, but I want it to be more minimal.
Yeah.
And so Donna was really respectful of that, and I was so thankful to that, because I felt like what you just said is true, that we get to have her arms and her hands and her whole body, you know, give this kind of openness that she doesn't usually let herself have. So thank you for noticing that.
Yeah.
That was like a little private thing that was going on inside me, but I wasn't necessarily sure anymore. Whatever.
Yeah.
And you're the first person who's
Oh, good. Oh, awesome. Yeah, I'm like I've watched the show like a million times. I just adore the show so much. And when I used to live in Florida when the first season premiered, and I was like shoving it onto everybody because no one had heard of it when the first season had dropped. So I'm really glad that you guys are getting so celebrated, because it's so layered in every single tiny detail.
Thank you.
Sure.
And you know what's funny is, I think what happens is people see the ads for it and they think because it's a period piece, it's going to have very little relationship to anything that people can take in, you know, in the now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's so fantastic about it is that a lot of shows have a darkness about them that kind of bring you down. And in a time in our lives, like, you know, when things are really deeply filled with struggle, I think there's something really buoyant about our show that I always say to people, like, if you're in a blue place, like, let yourself have the incredible vibrant color of this show, because there's so much that is delicious to, like, have as a relief and, you know, relieved part.
Yeah.
And so I it's almost like a little, I know why they sort of let the show drop during holiday season, because it feels like a treat.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It feels like, it feels.
Yeah. Like a Christmas souffle.
Yeah, it's very, very decadent. When I know the episodes are coming out, I just want to sit there and just, like, let it wash over me almost, because it's rich. It's a rich, rich series. So talking about moving from physicality, I guess, to I think Amy Sherman-Palladino's writing is sort of like, there has to be that really awesome rhythm that you guys have all been able to latch onto. I think it sort of feels like even harder than like Aaron Sorkin work, just because, you know, comedy is all about timing and it has to work. So after the first season and you get into the second season, is that rhythm a lot easier to like ease into? Like, I was thinking about the scene between you and Rachel when you're just picking out the clothes and Abe is coming in and out before you're going to the Catskills. That is such an incredible scene. Is that, like, rhythm really easy now that you're already, like, two seasons in?
No. You know, I have to say, I've always, one of the things I feel so, like, blessed at being an actor is I'm a nervously wound up person.
Mm-hmm.
And so I almost never experience calm. Like, this is going to, I'm going to jump for another show that I worked on, which was Two and a Half Men.
Uh-huh.
So Angus T. Jones, who, you know, played my son on the show, and I was his mother, and
mm-hmm.
And we would show up at the door because all my work as Judith on that show was, like, basically dropping him off at a doorway. I don't know if you ever saw the show.
Uh-huh.
Many people didn't. But the funny thing is, Angus would turn to me as a little boy, and he was so calm, and he'd always look at me like, why are you so nervous? And so I said, you know, I just, every single time we're here, every single time, I'm always afraid that, like, you know, someone's going to, it's the imposter syndrome, someone's going to say you don't really know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I swear I never feel, I just, I'm not built to have a sense of ease or confidence in any way. And so the truth is that every time we show up on set for Amy and Dan, I always feel like they're my parents, and I want to show them that I know what I'm doing. And the truth is, I feel, like, worried that the imposter syndrome is such that they'll be like, what? She doesn't know what she's doing.
Yeah.
So we'll probably be in our 60s, and I'll still be like, oh, please cross my fingers. I hope I know how to get the rhythm right. But the other thing that's amazing is, you know, Rachel is incredibly speedy in how she talks.
Mm-hmm.
But Tony's a little bit different. Like, sometimes, obviously, like when he's talking to his students in the Columbia scene.
Mm-hmm.
But often he has, like, a more languid, like, there's something different, you know what I mean? Like, there's something different in his musicality.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always have to be careful that I don't just become by osmosis a human that's just responding to the person that's offering me something.
Oh, yeah.
I'm actually, like, myself as Rose. So I often don't always eat lunch with everybody because I need to stay in the focus character, not that I'm Daniel Day-Lewis or something,
yeah.
I need to kind of, like, hold on to the music of my role without, like, losing it. And so when we get on set, we rehearse it a little bit, and then I kind of start doing a little bit of vocal work, and
mm-hmm.
then I kind of drop into the place and my voice, and then I kind of have to stay there for the day.
Yeah.
So in answer to your question, no. I definitely not found it that each year is like, you know, that I can just rest on the laurels of the year before. I always feel like it. Particularly last year when we were starting in France,
mm-hmm.
because Rose was A, speaking French, and B, was not really herself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's like the fish out of water, sort of, but, like, kind of back in the old water.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I had to find a new pulse.
Yeah.
And so I had to, like, rediscover, as you said, like, the different kind of speed mm-hmm. of who Rose was there.
Yeah. I feel like that nerve thing really helps you do, like, your best work almost. Like, anytime that I would do, like, a musical or a play, like, I would always be really nervous because I don't want to say, like, become complacent, but, like, I just don't want to, like, mess everything up. So I completely understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, and you know what else? And this is funny, and you're an artist yourself, obviously, as a writer and as a person that understands the theater world, and maybe you're still acting, et cetera, is I think you know this, too, is because what we do is so few and far between in terms of how often we get to do it,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? Like, we're not doing it every single day from 9 to 5, right?
Yeah.
We go in and out of work and we're freelancers.
Mm-hmm.
So that means the preciousness of it is so enormous to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so aware of how honored I am that the awe-inspiredness of it is something that I almost have to fool myself. Like, when I go into an audition, I have to pretend like, oh, I don't want it. I don't really want it. Because, like, if I do care too much, then I do get my own way. So it's almost like a little game that you have to play.
Yeah,
out,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, you feel like if you totally, like, if you go in there completely confident and you nail the audition, you're like, I got that.
Yeah.
You never get it.
Yeah. You'll never get it.
You'll never get it. Yeah. What was filming in the Catskills like? Was that energy completely different, too? Because it sort of just looked like, it just sort of looked like a sherbet. Yeah, it looked like a sherbet case, the entire thing.
It's so funny. One of my dresses I wear is literally the first time they put it on me, I was like, I had been a little bit of a ballet dancer when I was young, and there was a waltz of the flowers.
Uh-huh.
And I said, either I'm like either a Waltz of the Flower Dancer or I'm like a sherbet.
Yeah.
So because it had like light lime and like orange and lemon, and it was so, I felt like you could, you know, like eat the ice cream of my dress.
Yeah.
And certainly the same was true with all of Miriam's clothes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we shot some of the, half of the stuff that you, one thinks that you're seeing in the Catskills was actually shot on our sound stages.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other, like for instance, when we do that like crazy, like, Steiner dance game where we're sort of going like Steiner, that's a Steiner, you know, we're singing this like very juicy song. That one was actually done in New York, and it was such a hilarious day because I could not stop laughing at what an idiotic, like, no, I don't mean idiotic in a bad way, but like that song is such a hilarious, juicy song. But of course, Rose takes it so seriously.
Of course.
And so, you know, here I was so passionately doing it, but I was also, you know, having to make sure that, like, you know, it, basically making sure that I didn't, like, laugh too hard, except I was also wanting to delight in it. So it was the balancing act was great. But back to, anyway, what we were doing is I was, and my son actually goes to a theater camp, which maybe if you were acting too, you probably know this camp. It's the French Woods Camp.
Yeah.
Or Stage Door Manor. Mm-hmm. So it turns out that where we were shooting was an area called Deposit, New York, a terrible name probably. But it was only like 5 miles away from where my son's camp was. So I'd already fallen in love with the Catskills because I had gone to visit my son at this camp. And then when we showed up to actually see where we were shooting, it was, you know, sort of dusk on the water, and I remember going, wait a minute, all human beings should be allotted summer vacation to get to take them to the Catskills.
Yeah.
Like everybody should have a mandatory part of their work life that says we all get to go away and do summer camp, even as adults, because it was so rejuvenating and so, you know, so joyful, and it like allowed for a bonding with the others in the show that was deeper than anything we had experienced in New York. And so it was similar to what I experienced in Paris, but it was more goofy, laid back, and, you know, exhaustive in terms of like late nights. And then also, we were shooting outdoors so often, and then the buzz, you know, like the bugs and the, you know, the sort of the heat and the perspiration and all that. So it was amazing. It was everything that you think a summer camp experience would be for adults, and that's what it was.
Yeah, the scene where they do the sequence where you're just talking to Miriam about Benjamin, and she's just getting like so bored with you. I was looking at all the activities she was doing, like, and I thought to myself when I was rewatching it today, I was like, that looks like so much fun, like playing ping pong and just like.
It was so. And I'm going to say something about Rachel, and I always say this, and she like looks at me like, oh, Marn, you're so crazy, but this is the truth. That girl is not only a genius as an actress and as a human in like the way she's like mothering the kids that play my grandchildren and her children. She's like the better mother to them than all of us could dream of being. She's not even a mom in real life. But here's the other little secret about Rachel Brosnahan.
Okay.
She can play ping pong like nobody else. She can do like whatever else she did, like bicycle riding, she could do, you know, swimming. It's like the girl is, there's nothing she can't do. Because one day we had one of those, you know, those little things that have the elastic and the balls? Like it's like a paddle.
Like a paddle, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like forget what you call that. So I could only do it once, and so I hand it to Rachel, and she did it like 2,000 times. I looked at her like, I don't even understand. You feel like every single thing in the Guinness Book of World Records, you're going to be the winner at.
Oh, my gosh.
She's so multi-talented.
Yeah.
She was so adorable. Yeah, she could, all that ping pong stuff she was doing herself. That's not like CGI.
Right, yeah. So no trickery there, good.
Yeah,
So getting towards the end of the series, especially in the last two episodes, I was curious when I rewatched it this time, when Miriam is on the telephone and we only see Rose see her on the TV from a distance. Do you think that Rose will ever find Miriam funny? Like in the way that Miriam wants to be successful at being funny?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Someone, that is a question someone asked recently to me. And my answer is a little twofold on this. It's that I think that Marin wants Rose to accept her daughter. I'm not sure. Amy and Dana don't tell us where they're headed in terms of the trajectory, and we certainly haven't shot anything that has anything to do with what you're talking about. But I have a feeling that for the sake of theatrical, wonderful tension, mm-hmm. that if that happens, it would be near towards an end of our however long, many, many, many years I hope that the series runs.
Uh-huh.
But because I would imagine that the part of Rose that holds out on truly accepting her daughter
mm-hmm.
is the part of Rose that, like, doesn't want to feel that maybe she made her own choices, like, that we're not the, how do we put this, the road not taken, that, mm-hmm. like, because my daughter is going after a path of independence, there's a part of me that, because I didn't quite do it that way, that isn't quite willing to accept it in her. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rose is, I think, still questioning even her own choices still.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe when Rose finds more peace within herself, then she may be able to accept that about her daughter as well.
And Rose has that she has, like, a plan for how someone is to be successful. And maybe
Exactly. Like, it's like, it's that age-old thing that, you know, we always say, like, when our parents are not able to accept parts of ourselves, you sometimes wonder, it's because it's not so much that they're that way about us, it's that they haven't, like, figured it all out for themselves.
Yeah.
And I feel like Rose's development has still got a long way to go. And when we see that kind of development further along, maybe that's when we get to understand that she, like, looks upon her daughter with a kind of awe and respect.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's going to be a lot more time, potentially.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That Rose is going to be like, this isn't right. She's got to get back to, you know, meeting a husband.
Uh-huh.
Back into, kind of like she says to the kids, you know, at Columbia, the art school. People felt so betrayed by Rose because here she was in Paris, you know, seeking out a kind of independent life, and then she comes back and takes her art classes and then goes in and tells those young students, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. She tells them, like, go to the business school to meet a man.
And people, I think, felt so hurt by that. And I said, but the truth is, you guys, like, she comes back to New York and starts to, you know, circle back to sort of who she has been. And life is not a straight line. We don't always go, like, straight up or something
uh-huh.
or straight out. We sort of go up and around and then go backwards a few steps, right? And
uh-huh.
then we make another little circle. And that's kind of how I feel like Rose is being. It's like she's growing, but then she sort of goes backwards a little bit.
Yeah. And I feel like I saw this when I saw the scene recently when Joel thanks Rose for letting him stay at the house. And
yeah.
There's a shot of, it's really simple. It's you and Rachel standing there in the grass, and it's just the way that you're holding your purses. You guys are holding your purses the exact same way.
Oh,
and it sort of made me...
I don't even know if I ever noticed that.
And it's, like, you're holding it, right in front of you, like, the purse is sideways so you can see it, and I was like, oh my gosh, they're so alike in certain ways, and so different, obviously.
Yeah.
So, I guess I just have one more question for you. And I shall let you go.
No. And it's interesting. I just want to say one more thing.
Yes.
I wonder, it would be so unique. You know, there are points in my life, I have a very, very close relationship to my mother.
Uh-huh.
And there are parts of my life when I had so much that I wanted to offer her, but, like, it would have been a changing of the guard a little bit. And
mm-hmm.
it was, I think, hard for her to do that because she was so used to being the one that, you know, sort of knew more, right?
Yeah.
And I wonder if Rose will... It will be fascinating, and I hope the series lasts long enough that maybe, like, we go to the fortune teller slash, I always think of it as, like, the therapist,
uh-huh.
and maybe I bring Miriam to the fortune teller, just by the way, and, like, maybe there's some kind of moment where the two of them, like, have a kind of therapy where they get to, like, cry together. I mean, I get so far-fetched because that's not the way either of them work,
uh-huh.
but it would be fascinating if they have this, like, vulnerability that actually ever is able to be shared, because both of them, I think, have such strong covers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, they're not great at letting their hearts, like, completely go out openly.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And it would be interesting if they ever have that. Anyway, I cut you off.
No, it's okay. Just a sort of, like, standard question to, you know, that ends interviews a lot. Rose is in a place at the very end of the season where Abe sort of wants to change everything in his life, and I sort of, that was a very interesting place to leave it, because at the beginning of the season, Rose is sort of, like, rebelling, and she wants to go through some changes. She has, like, a hunger for something to change. Where do you sort of hope season three goes for your character.
You know, I think in every partnership, and so we'll look at like the Abe and Rose partnership, there's like that amazing like seesaw, right? Like mm-hmm. Like, well, somebody has more power and then the other person kind of needs the other, like, you know, the seesaw to go the other direction.
Yeah.
And I think Rose, as I said earlier, like, I think she's always been this person who like pretends that she is allowing for somebody else, like empowering them.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is she feels like she's the mastermind behind it all.
Yeah.
And but I think that like real true compromise is not necessarily her strong suit.
Uh-huh.
And it would be, but I also know that that's not always the fabric of like dramatic tension,
mm-hmm.
is to have compromise.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when two people are butting heads. But I think it would be really interesting if she really like allows for her husband. Well, kind of like what I was just saying about learning from her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting if she can learn from where her husband, like, it's so soulful what goes on with him at the end of that second season.
Yeah.
And so me as Marin was like, oh my God, when he says that he wants to give up his job, Marin was like, oh my God, yes, I celebrate your need for your midlife
yeah.
crisis, right? But that's not Rose. But it will be interesting if Rose is able to have a little bit of that kind of deep empathy for where her husband's life is and maybe some of the fragility of where he's facing.
Yeah.
So whether or not they let that to be part of Rose's trajectory this year, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But it will be interesting if she can actually do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I love talking to you. I could talk to you all day.
You're delighted.
Oh, thank you.
My God, you're so astute. I can't even tell you. You are so astute about what you have noticed in the show.
Oh, thank you. I just adore it. Like I said a million times, it's just, it's honestly, it's like, it's one of the best shows on TV, and it's just, you can tell everyone loves doing it. You can tell that everyone just wants the show to be the best that it can be. And I think something that I, not to go back to season one, but something that I just have to compliment you on, I think one of my favorite lines in the entire show that just informs the audience about a lot thematically about it is in the first episode where Miriam tells her parents that Joel leaves her and your reaction where you say, why? What did you do? That is like one of my favorite readings of the whole show, and that has stuck with me since I saw the trailer like forever ago.
Thank you so much. You know, I tell this story that it's like, thank you, because I tell a story years and years ago when I was in grad school, because I'm 100 years old, and this was when I was in my early 20s. There was a teacher who has since died. He passed away from AIDS, actually, and he was most inspirational teacher that I had. And his name was Paul Walker, which is funny because I know there was that actor that also passed away.
Yeah.
Walker, right? But anyway, so Paul was like an elf. He was like a little magical elf. And he would watch our work, and he would ask us to not be judgmental of the characters we were playing.
Mm.
And I had come from, I've been to Brown University, which is like obviously like a very liberal place in some ways. And I had like this whole group of feminist friends, and I fancied myself after many years like being like them. And so when I got to graduate school, where I went for NYU, and this is where I met Paul,
mm-hmm.
he sent to me in my first like teacher feedback session,
mm-hmm.
he said with love, with a sparkle in his eye, he's like, oh, everything you do is so brown. And he didn't even mean to be so critical. And he didn't, at first I was like, did he mean the color? But he meant that I was making my characters, because we were doing a lot of improv,
mm-hmm.
very politically correct. Like, everything about them was always going to be ethical and was always going to be, like, honorable.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, that they were always going to do the right thing, or what we believe in this day and age is the liberal right thing
uh-huh.
for 1980s or 1990s.
Uh-huh.
And what I think was interesting about that was I had to sort of stop in my career and say, you know what? Each character has their own ethical truth.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't always going to be Marin, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, Marin would think it was just, like, maybe repulsive that, like, that mother would say that to her daughter in that crucial moment when her daughter says that.
Yeah.
But that's Rose's truth,
mm-hmm.
right? What did you do? Like, that's the world she was brought up in, right?
Yeah.
And so thank you for noticing that line, because there might have been a part of me in the old days, if I hadn't had the genius of that teacher, you know, like I would have been like, oh, well, Marin would say the line like this. But it was like you had to get inside who Rose was in that moment and not judge it as like a person in the year 2019.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
So thank you. Thank you for noticing that, because we all are who we are from like the very private reasons of what our pasts are.
Mm-hmm.
And that I guess is one of the exciting things that you know from studying acting is like you have to let your characters think differently maybe than what you think.
Yeah.
And let them not be judged by yourself as you play them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And Amy's so good about that. Like Amy, you know, she's such a like a sparkling, fierce, independent, do it her own way. Like, look at how she wears those hats.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wild clothes to whatever festive occasion. You know, like, she's going to beat to her own drum.
Of course.
I think I've been a person that always wanted to make as many people happy and be as, like accepted in a wide way.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Amy does it her own way. And
yeah.
I feel like that's something I'm learning about Rose, that, like, she's not going to always do it. You know what I mean? Like, she's going to do it her own way.
Yeah.
And very strongly in the way that she has created to think is the right way.
Yeah, and very hard for someone to tell her that her way is the wrong way.
That's exactly right. And I want to, like, learn and follow that kind of path of, you know, more courageous thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
But thank you. And also Rachel, really, like, I've learned from Rachel as a person. She's also like Amy that way. And so is... Actually, so are all the women that they've cast. So Amy once said, when we were getting ready to do second season, she's like, I'm very drawn to actresses who are like, have like a real fire of strength inside them. And I snuck in the back door because I'm not
going
to stand that. But I was so taken by that, because like Lauren Graham or, you know, Sutton Foster or Rachel Brosnahan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or of course, Alex Borstein. It's like, these are really unique, extraordinary, visionary kinds of people. Like Laurie Metcalf's another example of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And these are the kinds of actors that I feel so lucky to be in the same space with. These actresses.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel, I love that. I want to have more scenes with them.
Yeah.
But I love having my scenes shared with Rachel.
Yeah, just having you call her a plumber repeatedly in the Yom Kippur scene. It's like she just doesn't get it. It's hilarious. Oh my God.
That's all she is.
Funny
in that moment, right? That she doesn't even like want to deal with the news about her daughter, because she's like, it doesn't make sense. Why is the plumber in our team?
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you.
You're such a delight. I hope our paths will cross.
Yes, me too. I love talking to you.
If we're ever in a space where we're, you know, doing interviews and stuff, will you make sure you introduce yourself?
Oh,
again, so that I get to see your face to our wonderful time talking.
Yes, I will. It would be my pleasure, trust me. All right. Thank you so much for your time. I had a great time talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks. And if you need anything more, call me or let my people know, and I'm happy to talk to you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
All right. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Day.